Well, I want to begin by sharing something that is really cool just in what God's doing in our church. Last week, we in all of our services, we did what we called Change of Life. And as a part of that, we as a church have planted a church in one of the poorest parts of Honduras, and we've partnered with Compassion International there. And as a part of that, last week, we had the opportunity to sponsor 300 kids that are in deep poverty. And I'm just excited to say that we sponsored all of them. In fact, we ran out, and it was just really cool. And you know, I was at all the services here in Greenfield, and I'm watching video of Oak Creek Franklin, and hearing about things going on online. And this is the only thing I could say. It's not perfectly said, okay, by any means, but just the experience of there is just a sensitivity about our church when it comes to those that are in need. And it's just there. And what I love about that is that's God's heart, because God's heart is for the least and for the poor and for those in need. And our church always steps up. And I was like, oh man, 300. I don't know how we're going to do 300. Well, we probably could have done 400. And the good news is that we are going to have more opportunities in the future, because long term, we're going to do some things in that area to plant more churches, to really, really knock out poverty in that area. And so just a really cool thing and a very significant thing. And I just, once again, just love being a part of a church that cares for the least of these. Now, today we are kicking off a new series called Canceling Jesus. And we all know what cancel culture is. Cancel culture started as a response to when celebrities and corporations, they would say or do things that people deemed as offensive or unacceptable. And it was more than just a boycott of things. It was just this idea of, we're now going to treat you as you no longer exist. And now it's grown into a response that people have when they disagree with someone. And so it's like, you vote this way, or you believe this, or you said that. You know, I'm now going to treat you as you no longer exist. I recently heard that there was actually a movement a couple years ago to cancel one of my childhood heroes, the Cookie Monster. And the reason why there's a move to cancel him is because they wanted him to eat more fruit, and he wouldn't talk about fruit, and so they wanted to turn him into the fruit monster. Now, I want you to imagine this. Imagine Cookie just trying to jack a bunch of apples down his throat, you know, and see how that would have worked. But now cancel culture is normal. It's a part of our culture. It's a normal part of our culture. It's like, you agree with me, we're good, and you don't agree with me, well, now I'm going to treat you as if you don't exist. Our series is called Canceling Jesus. And I would bet that most of us aren't thinking of canceling Jesus altogether. But the reality is that for many of us, we take many of the principles of cancel culture and we apply them to Jesus. And here's how we do this. If Jesus says something that we agree with, that it already aligns with how we are living our lives, we're good. But if he doesn't, and we don't agree with it and we don't like it, we either ignore it altogether, or what we do is we justify why it doesn't apply to our lives today. And so we might not cancel Jesus permanently, but we cancel Jesus partially. Now, let me tell you why this matters. A couple weeks ago, I was at the gym, and I was looking to just start a new cardio exercise, because I wanted to lose more weight and wanted to improve my cardio and all that stuff. And there's a couple guys at the gym that they kept telling me to do the stair stepper. Here's the stair stepper right there. And let me just tell you something. I hate that thing. I really do. I hate that thing. And I hate it for a lot of reasons, but the main reason I hate it is because it's much harder than what I was currently doing for cardio. And I liked what I was doing for cardio. I was comfortable what I was doing for cardio. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And then one of the guys just said, listen, here's what you need to do. You just need to start real short time-wise, and then just over time, just slowly kind of bump it up, and it'll be okay. So I'm like, all right. So I go there the next day, and I do it, and I still hated it. I'll be really honest with you. But I said, okay, I'm going to give it five times. And so after the fifth time, I was like, hey, be honest, I kind of like this. Because I started to see some improvement, and my time was going up, my speed was going up. It was actually helping me in my runs throughout the week, and so I kept doing it. Here's the thing. In working out, many times, the things that are the most challenging, that are most uncomfortable, that are most difficult, they are the very things that lead to growth and breakthrough when it comes to our health and fitness. And here's what we need to know. The same thing applies to following Jesus. And so here's what we're going to do for this series. We are going to look at some of the most challenging teachings of Jesus that most of us have canceled because of the challenge of them. And we're hoping, and our goal for the series is that we're going to go from canceling to follow, because I believe that by through these teachings, that there is growth and breakthrough that is waiting to happen. Because all of these teachings will help us love, look, and live like Jesus, which is the ultimate goal in following Jesus. And so here's what I'm going to ask. If you're a follower of Jesus, I want you to approach this series with a posture of openness. I want you to be open to actually applying some of the teachings of Jesus that maybe in the past you haven't been very open to. And here's why this is important. Partially following Jesus, which is what that is actually not following Jesus. And when we think partially following Jesus is, what we're really doing is we're not following Jesus. We are trying to get Jesus to follow us. And here's the thing, that never works because he never will. Now, if you're not a Jesus follower, here's what I want to encourage you to do. As we go through this series, I want to encourage you to try and apply some of these teachings. Now, some of you, you're going to walk through this and you're going to go, Mark, that is crazy. And you know what? That is a normal reaction to this. But I just want you to apply these teachings to your life and see what God does. Now, today, we're going to kick it off by doing a deep dive into one of the most challenging teachings of Jesus that I would bet that almost all of us here have heard before. And on a macro level, as we look at our world and all the division and hate and war, we look at it and we go, oh yeah, this is so needed right now in our world today. But then we back it down to a personal level. And as we back this down to a personal level, for many of us, we go, yeah, that's great macro-wise, but personally, I'm canceling this one for sure when it comes to this. Now, this teaching is actually found as a part of the longest message that Jesus ever gave, called the Sermon on the Mount. Here's the situation. The Jews were under Roman captivity at the time, which was beyond horrible for them. You see, the Romans wreaked havoc on every part of their life. They taxed the Jews 80 or 90%. Can you imagine that tax rate? Food was scarce. The economy was awful. The Romans kept stealing their real estate. And day after day, they would butt up against the oppression of the Romans, oppressive physically and oppressive psychologically. And so as you can imagine, the Jews had deep hatred for the Romans, and they waited day after day for the day that God would step in and he would fight back on their behalf. Well, enter Jesus. And Jesus, everywhere he went at this point, he is like Taylor Swift coming into Kansas City Chiefs Stadium. I mean, he is attracting a crowd and there's a buzz about him. But instead of him talking about God stepping in and fighting back, he talks about something that was not only very uncomfortable for all of them, but it also made them very angry. Here's what Jesus said. He said, you've heard that it was said, love your neighbor. Now, Jesus is actually quoting a passage in the Old Testament from the book of Leviticus. And this was a very important passage for Jesus because on multiple occasions, he talks about the greatest command in the Bible. And he says, okay, the first one is love God with all yourself. And the second one is just as equal. And then he quotes this passage from Leviticus, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, one of the things that Jesus would constantly do when he would teach is he was constantly redefining who their neighbor was. Now, for the Jews, their neighbor was exclusive. It was, we love only Jews. And so if someone is not a Jew, not our people, not our tribe, we don't have to love them. But here's how Jesus would constantly define neighbor. A neighbor was anyone, Jew, non-Jew, anyone who is near you. And then he says this. He says, you heard I said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Interestingly enough, this part actually wasn't in the Bible. Jesus was addressing something that had become a part of their culture. In other words, this was their version of cancel culture. And then Jesus says this. He says, but I tell you, in other words, here's what this really means. Love your enemies. Now, enemy and enemies, we don't speak in that language someday. You don't walk around and go, my enemy is, okay. We don't usually do that, but the idea of an enemy is very much a part of our lingo. And here's what an enemy is. An enemy is just anyone who is directly opposed to what you're about. Your enemy might be an ex or a sibling, might be a friend who is no longer a friend, might be a neighbor, might be a boss. Your enemy might not be an individual. It might be a group or groups of people. Your enemy might be a political party. Your enemy might be people who live in a different country or are a different skin color or who don't agree with you on certain issues. Your enemy might be people who work in certain professions, or your enemy might be Vikings and Bear fans. I mean, you know, they're kind of like all your enemies as far as that's concerned. Now, here's the thing. Jesus says, love your enemies. And if we're honest, our initial reaction is to cancel him on this. Because here's what we would say instead of what Jesus says. Here's what we would say. We would say, but I tell you, fight back against your enemies. Hey, speak out, get even, settle the score, make them pay. And listen, I get this, because I think the same way. I'm a fighter. I naturally fight back when someone hits me. And here's the thing, I'm actually good with it. But here's the problem with this. Fighting back always makes it worse, because it gets us caught up in this middle, this never-ending cycle of who can hurt who the worst. And the end result is everyone ends up hurt. So Jesus tells us how we should relate to our enemies. And we go back to what we just read. He says this, but I tell you, I want you to love your enemies. Now, the love that he is talking about is not this emotional kind of love. It's not like, oh, I can't wait to love my enemies. I'm feeling love for them. Because if that's what you're waiting for, guess what? That is never going to happen. The love that Jesus is talking about refers to an action, that you look at that other person and you want what's best for them, and your actions respond in a way that is best for them, even at a high cost to you. And so for Jesus, loving your neighbor as yourself in this context means this: how to make an enemy into a neighbor through love. Now, Jesus is not saying this. He's not saying, you know, don't do anything about it. He's not saying just sit back and take it, overlook it. He's not saying you need to look at just their lying and cheating and abuse and their oppressiveness and just act like it's no big deal. That's not what he's saying. In fact, oftentimes, the most loving thing we can do is call out some of that stuff. Not only is it loving because it protects you, but it also protects the other person in the process. But we never do it without being in a posture of love for that other person. And so Jesus is saying, we need to wrestle with this question every time we're around our enemy. How do we make an enemy into a neighbor through love? Well, how do we do that? I mean, how in the world can we do that? Well, as Jesus always did, he has some ideas. And these ideas, I'm just gonna warn you, we're gonna wanna cancel them. Here's what Jesus says. Here's the first way we can do that. He says this, hey, but I tell you, love your neighbors and pray for those who persecute you. And when he says pray, he doesn't mean pray that God would burn their house down, all right? What he does mean is he means pray that God's goodness, or that the goodness of God, would begin to take root in their life. Now, my guess is that most of us, we've never tried this, because this is not even a category for us. If you've been around here any period of time, I've shared the full story of this, so I won't do it now just due to time, but I've shared the story. I was on staff at a very large church, and they had to make some cutbacks just due to financial situations, and they were supposed to be small ones, but they ended up making really large ones, and I was a part of the casualty of the cutbacks. And there was just a lot of dishonesty and deceit about the whole thing, and when it happened, I was bitter at the lead pastor. And I wasn't bitter because I was a part of the casualty. I mean, that happens and all that stuff. I was bitter because of just the deceit and dishonesty about the whole thing. And so, you know, I get let go. And one of my mentors calls me a couple days later after it. He says, hey, I want you to do something. I want you to start praying for the lead pastor. And after he told me that, I just laughed on the phone. I said, oh, I've been praying for him, all right. Yeah, I've been praying that lightning would strike him on the way to the car. I've been praying that he'd be exposed as a fraud. I mean, all of these things. Oh, I've been praying, all right. I've been praying. And so I get off the phone. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. That's stupid and all that stuff. And I wrestle with that a couple of days. And I get up one day, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try this. Jesus says to do it. All right, I'm gonna try to do it. And the first time I did it, I meant none of it. But I just did it. I was like, okay, God, you know, I want, you know, best for him. Da 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 da. And I just kept doing it every day, once a day. About 2 weeks later, I actually started to mean it. because something began to change in my heart towards him, and my heart began to soften towards him. And what was interesting is a few months later, just through a weird series of circumstances, I ended up having lunch with him. And in that lunch, I wasn't angry or bitter in the least. You see, this is what makes Jesus so brilliant. Praying for our enemies isn't just for our enemies. It's actually more so God can set us free. Praying for our enemies, that's the way of Jesus. Love your enemies. Now, for some of us, we hear that and we go, why would I want to do that? I mean, honestly, why would we want to do that? I mean, it's just like, what benefit do I get? It doesn't benefit anybody. Well, here's the cool thing about Jesus. Jesus is actually going to tell us the why. And here's the thing. It's really important for us because without the why, we aren't going to do it. And so here's what Jesus says about the why. He says this, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. In other words, Jesus gives us one reason why we should do it. And it's as simple as this. Because this is what God's like. And when we love our enemies, we are becoming more like him, which is the goal of spiritual growth. And then Jesus makes this observation. And in this observation, this is where we get the line, that's not fair. All right, this is the root of it right here. Here's where it comes from. Here's what Jesus says. It's he, being God, causes his son. I love that. And whose son is that? But that God owns the sun, by the way. God owns the clouds. Jesus is letting us know that. He causes his son to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Now, rain back then was a sign of blessing. And it is in a Gregorian society. And so crops were everything for them. And it took rain and sun, obviously, to grow the crops. And so Jesus says, hey, the sun and the rain, God sends both on good people and on bad people alike. Now, let me just illustrate this for you by putting on my meteorologist hat, okay? Which means I can only be right 50% of the time, which is kind of a cool thing, all right? And you guys will still watch me on TV. All right, so here, let me just illustrate this for you. I was doing some research on weather around the world, all right? And so did you know that the weather in Moscow right now, Moscow, Russia, which you know, a lot of people, high percentage of our people in our country, when we think of Putin and all that stuff, and say, hey, we're not buddies with Putin. We don't like that dude, all right? But the weather in Moscow right now is ranging from the high 20s to the low 30s. That's not bad. I thought it'd be cooler than that, a little cooler than here, but I'd be fine. That's livable. All right, the weather now in Washington, D.C., which, by the way, is the headquarters of both the Democratic and Republican Party. Here's what the weather is there. High 40s, mid 50s. Not bad. Pretty close to what it was here today. Pretty close. The weather in Chicago, home of the Chicago Bears. Do you know what the weather? Not everybody's enemy. Not everybody's enemy, okay? The home of the Chicago Bears. Did you know what the weather is there today? Pretty much the same as it is here, but a little bit windier. Now, if there's someone that's an enemy that lives in Southeast Wisconsin, or there's a group of people that you would consider enemies that live in Southeast Wisconsin, do you know what the weather was like for them today? The same as it was for you. Now, notice, no typhoons, no hurricanes, no tornadoes brushing through there or lightning strikes, just sun and rain. You see, here's what Jesus is saying. Every time the sun goes up and the rain goes down, that's a sign that God is loving his enemies and your enemies. In other words, God is the ultimate enemy lover. And when we love our enemies, we draw closer to God because we reflect his heart. Now, if that's not enough to kind of go, Jesus, I don't know. I'm thinking of canceling you right there. That's a lot. As Jesus always can, he's not done. He's got another idea. And I'm telling you, this idea right here, very few people do this. Here's what Jesus says. He says, well, if you love those who love you, what reward implied from God will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, and I love that because, you know, that's our tendency. These are my people. This is my tribe. We're alike. Okay, this is our tendency. And if you greet your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do that? And so Jesus, what he does is he picks two enemies of the Jewish people, tax collectors, who were the worst of the worst. They were considered the Benedict Arnold of their day. And then pagans were the second one. Pagans were not Jewish. And they looked at them as they were far from God. And so they were especially the Romans. It would be the equivalent of us picking a suicide terrorist bomber. Now here's where Jesus makes this highly uncomfortable for all of us. He's suggesting an idea that, as I said earlier, that hardly anyone considers anymore or it's hardly ever done. And here's his idea. That instead of pick a side and rail against the other person or side, Jesus is suggesting go to the other side. And when you see that person or people, look at them in the eye. Implication, you start a conversation. Maybe have coffee with them. Maybe even start a relationship with that person. A couple years ago, I was talking to a guy, and I didn't know him that well, but we had known each other just through mutual friends, all that stuff. And so he's talking to me, and he is just fuming mad about Planned Parenthood and because they were performing abortions. And he looks at me and he goes, I'm gonna go across there and I'm gonna stand in front of their building. I'm gonna make a sign and I'm just gonna start yelling at anyone who goes in there. And so I said to him, I go, have you ever changed your mind on something because there was a bunch of angry people holding up signs yelling at you? And then I said, I'm gonna give you some different advice. And I said, instead of doing the yelling and all that stuff, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go over to Planned Parenthood. I want you to get to know someone on their staff. And then I want you to take them out for coffee. And then I want you to ask them their story. Because then for you, it's gonna go from just a position to a person. I never heard from that person ever again. You see, here's the thing. If he would have actually done that, it's kind of interesting what would happen. The anti-abortion crowd, they would have been like, hey, what are you doing? You don't go over there. You don't associate with such evil people. And then the pro-abortion people, they would have been like, hey, you don't come over here and you don't spread your hate over here. But this is exactly what Jesus is telling us to do. He said, if you just love the people who think like you, who believe like you, all that stuff, you are no different than the tax collectors and the sinners, and you will continue to perpetuate just the tribalism that is continuing to wreak havoc on our society for thousands of years. You see, we hear and read the stories of Jesus, and what's interesting is this. He did the exact opposite. He would constantly cross cultural and social barriers, and he would eat, and he would drink, and he would spend time with tax collectors and prostitutes, and he got in all sorts of trouble about it. But we read these stories today and we're like, ha, 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 I love anti-establishment Jesus. Jesus is so cool, man. Go get those guys. Go get those guys. Let me ask you, if you've read these stories before, have you ever got offended from reading these stories of Jesus? My guess would be, no, you haven't. And you know why? Because we don't have any emotional connection to those stories. But let me try to bridge this for us for a minute. Let's just say you get up tomorrow and you get up and you're reading an article or you're scrolling through social media and you see a bunch of pictures of Jesus having lunch with 10 people who are known child sex offenders. What are you thinking about Jesus then? And then later in the week, you see pictures of Jesus all over social media and he's in Russia and he is having dinner with Putin and you see them talking and all that stuff. And we know Putin. Putin has done some horrible things. Thousands of people have suffered and been killed because of the things that he has done. How would you feel about Jesus then? Would you be going, man, Jesus, that's really cool? Would you be doing that? Or would you go, Jesus, do you know how horrible these people are? You know, you don't eat with people like this. You give them what they deserve. How many of you, if you saw Jesus doing this time and time again, how many of you would go, I'm thinking of maybe canceling Jesus altogether? Now, please hear me. I'm not saying that Jesus would endorse anything that they did, but my point is this, is that instead of railing against people and positions, what he would do is he would have a conversation and start a relationship. In other words, Jesus would turn an enemy into a neighbor because that's what his heavenly Father is like. Now, here's how Jesus ends it all. And he ends it with the line to end all line. And he just says this. He says, "Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." So be perfect. Now, everybody, go and do likewise this week. Let me pray. No, I mean, we hear perfect and we're like, Jesus, that's impossible. Well, here's what the word perfect means. The word perfect means mature or complete. In other words, Jesus is saying that our ultimate goal for following him is to grow into the kind of person, to mature into the kind of person who is like God. And think about it. That's what the word godly means. It means godlike. If you want to know, if you're a Jesus follower, if you want to know or know a litmus test for how mature your faith is, Jesus gives it to us. And here's what it is. Where do you stand in relationship to your enemy? That the more you take steps to love your enemy, the more mature you are. The less you do, the less mature you are. Because for Jesus, the greatest litmus test is always love. Now, we hear this, kind of love your enemies and all that stuff, and the world we live in and all the stuff going on. And here's what we wrestle with. Okay, that's back then. Can this actually work in the real world today? And let me just give you an answer. Yes, it can. And here's how I know. Because if you're a Jesus follower, it worked on you. That's your story. Listen to the Apostle Paul, what he does with Jesus's words here. And he takes Jesus's words and he writes this passage in the book of Romans. And here's what he says. He says, "But God demonstrates his own" what? "Love." There's that word. "For us, that while we were still sinners." Now, we don't think about this, but here's what a sinner is in this context. A sinner is someone who is separated from God based on their own decisions. "But while we were separated from God," here's what God did. "Christ died for us. Since we now have been made right by his blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through him? For if, while we were God's enemies," do you know that apart from Christ, that's how God sees us? We're opposed to him. Well, he just said earlier, "But while we were still sinners, he loves us." He loves his enemies. "And then we were reconciled to him." What's reconciled? Two parties that were separate that are brought together. "To him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life?" Does it work? Yes, it works. Because it worked on you. And it's why Jesus wants us to love our enemies, because the same story of redemption and healing that God did in your life is the same story he wants to write in your enemy's life. So I want to leave you with two questions that I want you to wrestle with. Not cancel. I want us to wrestle with when it comes to loving our enemies. And here's the first one. Who are your enemies? Who maybe be an individual or a group of people? Maybe it's someone that has hurt you or they are still hurting you. Maybe it is an opposing political party, or it's someone that doesn't hold the same position. They may be a different sexual orientation than you. Maybe they are doing some really awful things right now and the thought of them makes you so mad. Who is it for you? Pick one, because we all have one. And then instead of canceling them, I want you to do the second thing. What's one thing? One thing you can do this week where you can begin turning your enemies into neighbors. And I'm not talking about endorsing what they are doing. And if they're abusive or dangerous, you stay away. But what does this look like in your life right now? You know, for some, the first step is you begin praying for that person. "Well, Mark, I'm not going to mean it." It's okay. You do it anyways. For others of you, it is next time you see them, instead of looking down like this and looking away and pretend they don't exist or going to the other aisle or whatever it may be, you actually look at them in the eye and maybe even say hi. And for others of you, it's instead of posting about them, you make it personal. Right, maybe asking them out for coffee and just asking their story and just listening and not saying anything in response. Love your enemies. Now, that's just week one. Aren't we excited? That's just week one when it comes to canceling Jesus. Now, I know for some of you, you're like, "Oh man, I may have to sit this series out because this is some tough stuff." A few weeks ago, I was heading to the gym And I have this routine when I go to the gym. And so I'm at home, and what I do is I put on my gym clothes on first, put my shirt on, shorts, usually put a sweatshirt on. On this particular day, it was really cold out, so I put some sweatpants on over my shorts. And then I drive to the gym, and I get there, and I put on my work clothes in the locker. And then I take off my sweatshirt, I take off the sweatpants, put my shoes back on, and then I put my earplugs in. And because I'm listening to some podcasts, and then I head out to the gym. And so I do all that. I'm walking out, and I'm two steps before leaving the locker room and getting into the gym. And I think to myself, oh man, do I have my phone with me? And I go like this to check, and I look down, and I had never put gym shorts on at home. I was two steps from walking out in my underwear in front of a couple hundred people, and I didn't even know it. As you think about this series, I want to encourage you to go on this journey, because I really believe it's going to change your relationship with God. It's going to change your relationship with others. And for many of us, we're going to discover a freedom and a healing, much like me and almost walking out gym floor, that you don't even know it yet. All because instead of canceling Jesus, you had the courage to follow him. Let me pray for us. Father, as we think about this idea of loving our enemies, and it's more than just be nice. God, this is wanting what's best for them and then actually doing what's best for them. This is doing things like praying for them. This is like looking at them in the eyes. This is developing relationships in places that we don't want to develop relationships. This is resisting the urge to just treat someone like they don't exist anymore, because that's what culture does. But your calling is higher and it's better. And I pray, Father, this week that we would have the courage to not only identify one of our enemies or enemies, but we'd have the courage to take the next step. And that's do one thing that shows love for our enemy, that turns our enemy into a neighbor. Father, we acknowledge just everything in us doesn't want to do it. We acknowledge that we do want to cancel. So God, I pray that your spirit would just move our hearts, would open up those opportunities this week, man. God, they'd be so clear that you are going, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. And then we would do it. God, what does that mean? I don't know. But I pray that there would just be some healing and some freedom experience because of it. We thank you for the call of Jesus, which is so different and so much better and so counterintuitive. God, would you help us to step into that? And we pray this in your name. Amen.